Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 115 of Nerd Pride Radio. 115, apparently, the 14th track on the Call of Duty Black Ops Zombies soundtrack is titled 115. Thank you, Internet. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's probably like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. My co-host this week is Steven Universe. You know why? Updates! Watch Steven Universe! Watch Steven Universe. Watch it. Watch Steven Universe. I know, I've told you this in prior episodes, but I'm telling you now again, go do it. Go. It's 52 episodes in season one. 52 episodes, they're only 11 minutes long each. I've seen them all, and they're amazing. All right? And you can get it. If you have a cable television package that includes Cartoon Network, then you can go online and watch all the episodes for free on Cartoon Network. Well, not free, but, you know, as part of your cable package. You can watch them online at CartoonNetwork.com and see all of them. If you pay for Hulu, you can go see all 52 episodes of Season 1 on Hulu. That's where I saw them. All right? This show is incredible. It is incredible. Steven Universe himself, the character, he is joy, and he is love, and he is awesome. All right. I can't tell you how much I love Steven Universe, because to do that would require that I go through all the cool things about it. And I don't want to tell you all the cool things about it, because I want you to see them, and I want you to experience them, and I want you to go through those moments as well. Now, I'm going to warn you, Cat Fingers is really disturbing. Cat Fingers is early on, and you'll know Cat Fingers when the episode comes up. It's entitled Cat Fingers, and it's Cat Fingers. That one's disturbing. I can't watch that one again. But the rest of them are amazing. And some of them will make you cry. And almost every one of them is going to bring you amazing joy, because they are so cool. Steven Universe is a wonderful, wonderful cartoon. You have to watch it. Go do it. There. All right? Have I sold you? All right, good. Updates are over. All right, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into that master list. First thing, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. All right, and here is the magic of this week. Is I told you last week on the gaming table that it's about time to level up. Isn't it time to level up? Shouldn't I be level 7 by now, DM Darks? And then, at the end of this week's game on Thursday, yeah, you guessed it, we get to the very end, and he plays coy about it. He's like, yeah, you know what? It's time to level up. I'm like, yay, DM Darks listens to my podcast. And then it turns out that he's a few episodes behind. He hadn't heard that one yet. It was just already in his plans. I told you it was time. All right, so now, Darks, now that you've caught up and you're listening to this episode now, thank you. That was amazing. How awesome is DM Darks? So awesome. This isn't going to be a long gaming table, just enough to tell you that I love leveling up. I told you last time I love leveling up. Well, I love it even more now. Once I actually read into detail, it feels like cheating. This whole new level is, all right. Do you play D&D? Do you play Pathfinder? Are you even halfway familiar with these? Let me tell you. We fight a lot. That's kind of what the game does, is there's lots of combat scenarios. There's also lots of role-playing scenarios and lots of things where we talk things out and we investigate and we solve mysteries and, you know, like the Scooby Gang. But we also fight things a lot, all right? And when we get into combat, my first job in combat is I sing a song because my song is inspirational. It magically bolsters everyone else's abilities and they all hit better, do more damage. I'm the support services for the group. All right, well now, first round, now I can not only start my song, but I can also cast a haste spell, which I didn't realize haste covers 7 people. So when I cast this spell, now the entire party gets sped up. So now we're all doing an extra attack every round. It's like for a lot of us, we're doubling our capacity for damage here with one spell. It feels like cheating, okay? I shouldn't be able to do this. Which, you know, of course, it also means that the opposition we run across should also be able to do stuff like this. So, you know, it means that they're going to get tougher as well. And, you know, we're about to go into a fortified location being defended by 30 ogres. At least 30 ogres. That's what they thought they saw before they got run out. So it's going to be fascinating and awesome. But I'm just going to tell you, I love leveling up. Oh, there's so much to it. So many good things. And I'm just, you know, a kid with a bunch of new toys at this point, getting to flip through the book and look at all the abilities. And, oh, I get to choose skills again. Oh, look, I can start building magic items. I am so good. All right. I'm having a great time. And it was an awesome end to this portion of the mission. We finally finished clearing out the house and barn where the half-ogres live. And we got the last of them gone, and then we faced this massive spider. I mean, massive. The thing was on the map, all those legs, 15 feet across. So, huge. I think technically that counts as huge. See, that's the thing, is I say huge, but huge is actually, a stat with meaning within the game. So I think it was huge because the little mini on the board was that big. So I think it could have been large. I mean, it may have been just all legs and it wasn't really, you know, the body may not have been that big. Anyway, it doesn't matter, does it? We leveled up and it was awesome. So, boy, you know, if you're not playing Pathfinder or Dungeons and Dragons or some role playing game, I don't know how you're listening to this podcast, but thank you anyway. But also, man, go play, find a group, get online, do something, because this is so much fun. I'm having a great time. All right. Enough gaming table. Now it's time for the unnamed history segment.
Don't know much about history.
That's right. That awesome song by Sam Cooke means, yeah, it's history. I just don't have a name for it yet. And the name is the Unnamed History segment, obviously, because I've kept it for years now. But anyway, I've told you I've been listening to the history of Rome, and I'm just about done with the history of Rome. But one of the things that strikes me about it is how often there are points in the history of the Roman Empire where had something even tiny, gone a slightly different way, all of history would have changed. I mean, everything. Look, the emperor forgot to wear his breastplate. He was in a hurry that morning, and he didn't put on his breastplate before he charged into combat. He took a spear in the side, and he died. Okay? Had he remembered his breastplate, and had he lived, the empire would have come out strikingly different as a result. All right. And it's little examples like that, the host of History of Rome enjoys pointing out spots where wow, you can't help but wonder what might have happened if X. He obviously is a fan of alternate history, as I am. And so my question is, the way it's written out on my notes here, I just wrote down important people versus history. And it's the idea of, is history inevitable? Because there's, when I was growing up, it was phrased to me that, you know, because there were some time travel games, for example, that I played, where they made the point that for the most part, history is pretty inevitable. You go back in time and you take out one person or you change these actions, and yes, it'll change things a little bit, but ultimately the overwhelming stream of history will bring things back together, and it'll still continue on in pretty much the same way it would have otherwise. And I bought that then, but no, then you read the butterfly effect and chaos theory, and you understand that, you know, tiny changes can have huge later effects down the road, huge unpredictable effects down the road. And you start to wonder, is it that inevitable? I mean, look, for example, if Eli Whitney hadn't invented the cotton gin, you know, if Eli Whitney had somehow not been in the inventing business and instead had been, you know, a merchant traveling the seas, who knows what he could have been doing. If it wasn't Eli Whitney, yes, someone else would have invented the cotton gin. That would have happened. It would have happened within a couple of years of the time that it did already, more than likely. You know, if the U.S. hadn't unlocked the secrets of the atom and come up with the nuclear bomb when it did, would someone else have come up with that? Would someone else have developed it? Yeah, because everyone kind of knew that that's where we were going. And someone would have developed it. But see, that's the thing. If it hadn't been the U.S., well, things would be extremely different now. You see what I mean? I mean, yes, that invention would have come about anyway, but whose hands it's in and what exact moment in time it comes up at makes a huge difference for stuff. So, I mean, for me, it's the idea that, you know, Alexander the Great, if Alexander the Great didn't die at the age of 33, I mean, died of illness, you know, if he hadn't caught that, if he hadn't interacted with that one communicable person, contagious person, and contracted whatever it was, if he hadn't have died at 33, if he had lived another 30 years, I mean, all of world history would be completely different now. Certainly all of Western history, and eventually in our interactions with the rest of the world, the whole world's history would have come out different. Better? Worse? No idea. But I mean, Alexander the Great drove his troops all the way to India to take over territory, and he had no intention of stopping. At what point would he have burnt out? At what point would he have lost? At any point would he have finally settled down and said, look, all this expansion has been awesome, but it's time to start holding an empire and not just building it. You know, how would we be different? I don't know, but we'd be super different. If Ambrose, all right, and this was one from History of Rome podcast, if Ambrose hadn't become Bishop of Milan in the 4th century, and here's the thing. There's no reason he had to become Bishop of Milan. The man wasn't even a priest. He was a religious man. But you know, he was a bureaucrat. He was an administrator. And he was trying to keep peace, and he was trying to be the level head in this battle back and forth, between factions. And rather than choosing from the lesser of two evils, the people said, you know what? Screw these guys. We don't want to elect any of them our bishop. We want Ambrose, because Ambrose seems really level-headed. And Ambrose said, yeah, no, I don't think I want to be Bishop of Milan. But they eventually forced the issue, and he decided, all right, fine, if that's what the people want, I'll be Bishop of Milan. And Ambrose, as a result, Ambrose set the precedent for the Roman Empire and thus for the world in the context of Christianity. He set the precedent that the church and God has authority over everything else. Think about that. That's huge. All right. The idea that, yeah, look, you may well be a king. You may well be an emperor. You may well have, unstoppable power. Absolute authority over your realm, authority that you say has been handed to you by God. Absolutely. You are in charge of all things, but the church still has the ability, to correct you. The church still has the ability to judge you and decide what is and is not appropriate for you. And in a day and age where, people were, I mean, all people, even at that level, no matter how cynical they may have been, still fully believed in all of this and were fully aware of the consequences, potential consequences to their immortal soul. And so when Ambrose, as the representative of the church, came forward and rebuked the emperor for his actions and said, look, you need to atone for this. You need to. And the emperor bowed his head and said, yeah, okay, I will. I mean, that the emperor of Rome submitted to the church as the final authority. That's huge. And that would not have happened if Ambrose hadn't been the man he was. Wouldn't have happened. Because up till then, the whole point was, you know what? The church is a bunch of squabbling different factions and yes, religion has always been important, but there's lots of religions and we tolerate all sorts of religions. And while Christianity may be the dominant religion right now, there's still others out there. And ultimately, the emperor is above all of that. The emperor, in fact, is called upon to settle disputes within the church. All right. And the emperor's word helps determine the course of the church. And Ambrose turned that completely on its head. So again, the idea that the church reigns supreme over everything, that was Ambrose. All right. And without him, that may never have happened. That may not have been an inevitability, because who's going to stand up to the emperor and tell the emperor he's wrong? I mean, to his face. You know what I mean? That's a huge thing. So if Ambrose had not been part of that day and part of that election, if Ambrose had not been selected, or if he had, when he said, look, I'm not going to be bishop, if he had stuck to his guns on that and said, I'm really not going to be bishop, and someone else had been chosen instead, how would history, all of history, have been different? I find that fascinating. So, what else? All right, I already talked about the Germans and the bomb. I already talked about the butterfly effect. See, I actually wrote some notes out here. I don't know. And so I bring that forward to today, and I look at the world stage, and I look at the machine-like nature of government and culture and the way things move forward, and you see things that change and happen, but they're changing in these huge waves of people coming together to decide something. And it feels like, you know, even the most important people around feel like just cogs in this whole thing. You know, like, yeah, okay, you could take out a leader over here, or this person, you know, never had risen to power, or this person wasn't involved, or something changed. And it feels like, yeah, but everything's still going to march on to this inevitable conclusion, whatever path we're on right now. It feels like it feels like one person doesn't make that much of a difference. Even a really powerful and important person, it feels like, yeah, but you know, even if we're talking presidents, you know, if Hillary wasn't there, there'd be someone else similar to Hillary who would fill in this role for this next election, and that, you know, and whether she wins or doesn't win or anything. But it makes me wonder, yeah, but we had people who made this kind of difference, even, you know, up into this, you know, the last half of this last century. I mean, look at Hitler, you know. Yes, Germany had been oppressed, and yes, Germany needed to make a push to rise up again. They needed to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they needed to try and assert their dominance again on the world stage. And Hitler filled that role and did it in a very particular way that had it not been Hitler, would someone else have stepped up to lift Germany up? Would they have had a movement that would have created that? Yeah, very possibly so. They would have risen up again, and Germany would have become a world power again and pulled themselves out of the horrible after effects of World War I and the Great Depression and all of that. But if it hadn't been Hitler, how much different would the world have been? Because Hitler was a nutbag. I mean, Hitler was a psychopathic, evil nutbag who did horrifying things. And the whole course of the Third Reich, the whole course of Germany during those years, was guided by the will of one man. And had he not been there, how different would the world be now? All right. Or conversely, you know, if they had gotten the bomb first and they had won, how different would the world be now? I mean, there's so many little things that could have changed, you know, back in the 1940s. And so if we look at it and we carry that forward, you know, that's not that long ago. It's only a few decades. So I'm thinking that the same people have to exist today. The same events, the same possibilities have to be there today. That same butterfly effect has to be out there. We just don't know who those people are. All right. We can look back later, and I'm sure 100 years from now, 50 years from now, people will look back on our day and age and go, you know, here's what was going on in the early parts of the millennium, and here's the people who were moving this. And you know what? If this one person had not made the decision to run for president, if this one person had not gotten involved in science at an early age, if this one advocate hadn't stepped up, look how much different the world would be. I mean, I look back at Alexander the Great. I look back at Hitler. I look back at Ambrose, the Bishop of Milan, and any number of cases throughout history. And I look back and I go, God, if that one person hadn't existed, how different would the world be right now? And 100 years from now, people are going to be looking at our time and saying, wow, if this one person hadn't existed, imagine how different it would be. And it boggles me to think of that. It's kind of an overwhelming thing to think that those people are here now, the people that are shaping history, without whom the world would be unbelievably different 100 years from now. And I have no idea who they are. I find that crazy. Anyway, that's just me. That's just me rambling. Again, I love the History of Rome podcast. I love the Hardcore History podcast, and I love alternate history, and it just inspires me. Inspires me a lot. Okay, enough of that. You know what it's time for now? I got something new. That's right. Now it's time for a segment that I'm calling Uncomfortable Topics. Yeah, so you have to whisper it. Right, I can't even remember who the comedian was. She talked about having an aunt or her mom or whatever, whoever the character was in her joke, who every time they got to a sensitive subject, it'd be, well, you remember Sally, divorced. And would have to whisper whatever it was. Oh, yeah. Well, my nephew Bobby, he's a homosexual. Yeah, that kind of thing. So and that was the joke. And so now this is Uncomfortable Topics. That's what we're doing. And, I told you last week, I, as much as I don't like talking about uncomfortable topics, controversial subjects, they are thought provoking. They boil in me a little bit. They churn around. I have all sorts of ideas and thoughts, and eventually I have to say something. And last week, I talked about the attacks in Paris, talked about ISIS a little bit, talked about the response that we were seeing on Facebook. And that's actually what I'm going to do this week as well, is a little continuation of that. Well, maybe a long continuation of that. We'll see. But anyway, my thoughts on the topic are twofold. All right. First off, the first aspect is the refugees, right? And I talked about it last week, and my opinion on that hasn't changed. Look, we don't stop taking in refugees. And at this point, look, all right, to address everyone else's concerns, that oh, terrorists are going to sneak in, and so we're afraid and all this. First off, do you know what our vetting process is for refugees in this country? Unless we do something to seriously speed this up, that we're gonna take in 10,000 refugees into this country. We're gonna take 20,000 refugees into this country. But in a process that takes 18 months to 2 years for people to actually finally get in, where are they in the meantime? How are we helping them? What are we doing? It's slow. I mean, realistically, you know, again, our vetting process, we want to make sure we're not getting terrorists in here. We want to make sure we're not getting undesirables, that the people who are claiming to be refugees really are refugees, that we're going. So there's a long process. And there's a lot to do with it. All right. And of, you know, of all the people that we've let in since 9/11, how many people have actually been terrorists? So we bring in a lot of people a year. We have immigrants from all sorts of nations. We bring in refugees. There's lots of people that come to our nation. How many of them have been terrorists? I don't have the number. I've heard that, you know, 1 in 700,000 people over the last, you know, 14 years. And I have no idea if that's accurate or not, but that's the number that keeps getting thrown around. It is. And the other thing is that, and everyone's saying this is not original to me, obviously, but the idea that we, you know, they want us to start denying people. They want us to lock our doors. They want us to turn people away because that gives them more control over the people in their area. And then, by the way, ISIS, I have to admit ignorance, all right? I'm only vaguely aware of world situations. Hold on. Someone's home. Hey, it turns out Aiden's home, and he's sitting and listening quietly for a little while, but we'll have the Pod-O-Matic soon enough. All right. Anyway, where did I leave off with ISIS? Oh, okay. Here's the thing. Is we know that they want us to turn away refugees. It gives them more control. Oh, that, and then, okay, that's where I built up to, is that I have to admit my ignorance, that I'm only passing familiar with lots of world issues. But, you know, I've intentionally kind of not kept up with stuff because it's just so hard. But in doing my research and my due diligence on the topic, I mean, ISIS currently controls an area of land in Syria and Iraq, mostly the size of North Dakota. Okay. So it's not even like they have a small territory. It's the size of a big U.S. state and has 10 million people under their jurisdiction at this point. 10 million people, the vast majority of which don't want to be ruled by ISIS, and thus the reason they're fleeing. And if they can keep other countries from accepting them, they A, get to keep their people there, and B, they then have more of a case when they try and argue that, see, the West hates us. It's us against them. They become justified in their claims of racism and oppression and religious intolerance, and thus they get to build up to this war. And second of all, by the way, it seems ridiculous. You know, the whole world is against them, and yet they're persisting in this. But it's because they're a bunch of apocalyptics. They, if I understand correctly, the caliph that they've, or caliph, is that the right title? Anyway, the guy in charge over there, the caliph. Cool. Anyway, the guy in charge over there, according to their reading of scripture, it's him, and then there will be only four more after him. They've got the number locked down. And then at the end of that, that's when the final apocalyptic battle between them and all the infidels of the world will occur.
Whoa, hold up. Whoa, wait.
That's what they're building up to.
The world's days are literally numbered?
Well, I don't know the exact number of days, and I don't know if they do either. But they know that they have four more caliphs after this one, and then they're done.
They blow everything up.
So what they're doing is they're intentionally trying to bring about this war. They want a holy war because it then justifies what they've been prophesizing. Anyway, it justifies the worldview that they're already trying to push upon people. And so therefore, if they can bring about this great holy war, the fact that it's them against everyone else in the world, including most of their own people, that doesn't register with them because to them, it's a holy war and they're right, and thus they'll win. It doesn't matter that numerically and on paper and you lay it all out and it just seems stupid. No, they're convinced that they're going to win. And so I educated myself a little bit. I learned all of this. And again, this is what they want. They want us to hate them. They want us to go to war with them. And so to me, I've been trying so hard. I have started writing an essay three times this week. I've sat down, I've gotten a few paragraphs into it, realized it was crap, threw it away. But I want the essay to be titled All the Who's Down in Whoville. And that way, when I post it up, I can have a picture of all the Who's singing, and use that title and explain how, yeah, ISIS comes in and they create this situation and they stir it all up because this is what they want. They want the hate. They want the war. And then they sit there with their hands to their ears listening. And all they hear is singing. Okay? It's the rising up that, oh my, wait. But we attacked them and they're still being nice to the refugees. They're still helping people. They're still, it's just like the Grinch. And I don't expect ISIS's small heart to grow three sizes that day, but the idea.
You expect them to be green.
But the idea that they can lob their worst at us and not destroy the goodness of the people that I know around me, not destroy the generosity of spirit that we all have and that we need to have. That up till now, you know, we want to help people. We want to do good things. And the fact that there's evil people out there trying to scare us shouldn't stop us from doing good things. And sadly, there's so much that I would want to squeeze into such an essay that it never sounds right to me because it's got to be all the information's got to be there, but then it also has to be succinct enough that, people will actually read it and get to the point. And oh man, I just can't shape it. But man, the idea is there. And again, we just need to be good people. There's just no excuse for, and if you want economic reasons, I mean, if you want more than just the goodness of our hearts, which really should be enough, but if you want more than that, yeah, we've got 30 governors out there blocking, refugees, claiming that they're not going to allow them into their states, that they're going to do whatever they can, to try and stop this, even though technically they don't have the authority, but they do have Congress people who might have the authority. So therefore, they're trying to block refugees, but go look in those states and ask the mayors of huge cities, and many of them have come forward and said, no, no, we want refugees. We want them here. New immigrants are hardworking people. New immigrants will take on all sorts of different jobs and fill all sorts of different roles. And in general, new immigration, refugee immigration to big cities is nothing but an economic boon to them. All right. It is economic growth, by a huge factor. All right. So even if you're not into doing things out of the goodness of your heart, do it because it's good for our economy. Do it because it's good for our people. All right. And don't sit there and worry that, you know, we're going to let in 20,000 immigrants and somehow lightning might strike and one of them might be a terrorist and some horrible thing might happen. Look, in France, everyone wants to make a big deal about the one guy in the French attacks that had posed as a refugee in order to get into the country. Well, yeah, but seven others were native Belgians. They were Belgian citizens. They were already there. And you think just because one guy didn't get in, that would have stopped them? They were still going to do this because they already had the people there. They already had people in place that could do this. And just because one guy posed as a refugee to get in, that doesn't stop them from what they're doing. All right. This is, the whole argument is silly. There's just, to me, there's no reason not to do unto others. You know what I mean? Do unto others. There's no reason for us not love and be kind and take care of people and make this world a better place. We should still be doing that. Absolutely. Now, okay, on the flip side of that, we do need to attack them in their homeland. We do need to go after them where they live.
And that was two sides of a very different coin.
No, it's one coin. But look, what we need to do is not change our policies here at home, not stop bringing in – we're already fighting them. We're already fighting them in Iraq, and we're already fighting them in Syria. And the entire world is agreed on this, that we need to be fighting them. And in my personal opinion, the main thing we need to do, though, is make it a UN decision. Let the UN take the lead on this. The UN is in charge. And we will provide resources and money and men and women, and we will get over there and we will help. And we will help to free those people who are trapped under an oppressive regime. I mean, this is a case where, you know, is war ever justified? Is violence ever justified? Well, okay, when people are dying in such huge numbers, when they are under such a cruel form of oppression, and everyone agrees that it is a cruel, oppressive government, then yes, this counts as self-defense, or this counts as defending the lives of others. I mean, in any jurisdiction in this country, yeah, murder is illegal, but hurting someone or even killing someone because they were attacking you and it was self-defense or defense of loved ones, you're defending someone else, preventing serious, grievous harm to someone else, then yeah, it becomes justified. And in this case, we need to continue and intensify the work we're doing over there, but we need to do it as a world. We need to do it as a unified whole. And we even, this is odd, but we even need to let Putin take the big role that he wants to over there. I mean, it still needs to be under UN auspices, but Putin's come forward and says, look, Russia's ready. We're going to go in. We're going to do our thing. We're going to help out. Russia's ready to take the lead on this one. And in part, well, they are the big kid on the block over there. I know. We're the U.S., so we're the big kid on the block everywhere in the world. But in all honesty,
they're kind of like our toady.
If this were happening in Cuba, and, you know, the European Union or Russia or China wanted to step into Cuba and say, no, don't worry, we've got this. Let us send some troops in there. How would we react as a nation? We would tell them to step off. We would tell them, hey, Cuba is our backyard. We'll take care of this. All right? Because it really is. This is our neighborhood. This is our domain. And if something's going to go on in Cuba and the world needs to step in, then by God, the U.S. is going to take the leadership role in that because this is our area. Well, you know what? Putin and Russia, as much as Putin may seem crazy, he's the big kid on the block over there. And all he's ever wanted in all of this crazy posturing and weird crap that Putin does, all he's ever wanted is to just assert the fact that, look, Russia is still a superpower. Russia is still a world force. We may not be the Soviet Union, but we're Russia, and we're huge, and you need to respect us. And so you know what? In this particular case, all right, let's respect him. It's his backyard. Let him get in there. Let the UN get in there. Let the Muslim nations in that area get involved. And that's muddier because I don't know how many of them really want to. I think they would much rather let other people take care of some stuff and then they can just react to it. But I don't know where all the allegiances lie in that area. I don't know how to quantify it. I can't, my research didn't go that far. I only got a little ways in. But yeah, we still need to keep working to root ISIS out of the area and free the people that are there. But we can't be the rogue cowboy doing it on our own again. All right. I mean, yes, Afghanistan was essentially a joint operation, but really it was the U.S. with some hangers-on following us in. And there were lots of nations that helped us, but it was really a U.S. operation. Iraq was entirely a U.S. operation. I mean, yes, there's always other countries involved, but it was all us. All right. Well, this time it needs to not be all us. Something needs to be done, but the world's in agreement that we should do it, so let's let the world do it. That's my particular take on it. So, let the refugees in, love people, do unto others. That's really all there is to it. And then B,
kill them.
B, get in there and root ISIS out, but stop trying to do it all by ourselves. For God's sake, don't let us be the cowboy captain on this one. All right.
Don't let us be the Zap Brannigan.
Yes. Don't let us be Zap Brannigan. For God's sake, let's get
wave of my own men.
Right. Let's get Dupe in there, and Dupe can handle things as a group. So
a Dupe group?
A Dupe group. Yeah, get your Dupe in a group. All right. See, now you've completely subverted what was actually a very intense and serious, uncomfortable topic. All right. But I'm done with that. And now that Aiden's here and ready to make jokes, it's time for the Pod-O-Matic. That's it. Damn it.
Who keeps running that off?
Oh, you Me. Guys do? Yeah. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will at nerdprideradio.com/forums. And I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our first number, it's 29.
Can I say something real quick?
No. Okay. Yeah, what do you got?
Like, how do you feel about repeat questions for the new listeners?
What do you mean?
Like, if someone's just starting listening now and they want to know something that was already asked in a previous episode and don't want to go find it.
Oh, all right. Tell you what. If you're a new listener and you're afraid to submit questions because you're afraid you might repeat something or you want to know something that maybe I've already talked about or whatever, here's my recommendation. You have to listen to all 150 hours of the podcast before you're allowed to ask me anything. That's just the rules. If you're not that committed, then what are you even doing here? You people are fool. No. I get repeat questions all the time and I don't care. It's awesome. I have had no less than 3 people ask me my shoe size, which is 12. I have had multiple people ask me my favorite size of die, which is a die 12. I have had lots and lots of repeat questions and I don't mind them. Because I've discovered listening to other podcasts that I've got. There's some podcasts I listen to where people are just great storytellers. And it doesn't bother me when they tell the same story a couple of times. I mean, as long as they're not doing it, you know, every week. But, you know, if he's got this great story about the time he met Frank Sinatra, and then he's going to tell me the exact same story 6 months later, I'll listen to it again because it's entertaining. And I'm assuming that you guys feel the same way here, that it's not, you know, every now and then I get a repeat question. You guys have to listen to the same answer. Maybe you remember the last time I talked about it. Maybe you don't. But I assume it's not anything that's bothering anybody because I haven't had anyone complain about it. So yeah, feel free to ask. It doesn't make any difference. And sometimes I do sometimes when I get questions from people, especially if they send me a big list of questions, I just copy paste them in and I don't even look at them. But sometimes, you know, I actually read through the questions as I'm putting them in, and that way I can weed out ones that, yeah, they are repeats or they are ones that just because of the nature of them may not work. Although I don't do that very often. Because you guys notice, I leave in lots of questions that make me terribly uncomfortable. Because they're fun to answer. So, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter. If you want to ask me something, just ask me something. It doesn't matter if it's a repeat or not.
Anyway, we're on 29. Yeah,
29. I knew there was a number here. And that number is from Daz. Daz says, F, Mary, Kill, Velma, Daphne, Shaggy. All right. Well, that is super easy.
Oh, is it?
Sure. F, Mary, Kill. You gotta pick one for A Wild Night of Passion, one to marry and live with forever.
I understand the rules.
And one to kill.
I understand the rules.
Oh.
But is your answer really that easy?
Yeah, I already have mine, but do you want to answer it yourself?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Kill Daphne because she's fake.
Okay.
Have my night of passion with Velma and marry Shaggy because he seems like a lot of fun.
Wow. That is not where I would have gone. Okay.
Oh, you're gonna be totally sexist about this?
No, I'm going to have a wild night of passion with Daphne because, well, okay, she's hot and I'm sexist. Okay, that's fine. I would marry Velma because she is a very fascinating, interesting nerd, especially when played by Linda Cardellini. Woof. And then I would kill Shaggy because he's obviously an idiot stoner, so he's not... Not that, hey, look, to all my stoner listeners, I'm not saying you all deserve to die. I'm just saying that if I have to kill somebody, I personally don't feel like having sex with Shaggy, and I don't feel like being married to him forever and hearing him every single day going, dude, you ever really looked at your hands? No, I'm done.
There is no evidence. Well, no, direct evidence that says Shaggy does pot.
Except that he does. So, wish we could talk about it further. But the next number is 32. And 32 is from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, if you were asked to guest on Will Wheaton's Tabletop, which game would you want to play? And who would you want the other players to be? Okay. This is an excellent question. First off, I would want to play any game at all. I would want them to pick a game, someone to pick a game that I've never even heard of before because I've discovered I really like playing new games. Although I also wouldn't mind sitting down with them to just play a game of Munchkin for God's sake. I would love anything. And I don't care who's at the table as long as I've got Will Wheaton there and I've got Felicia Day there. If I have those two sitting at the table with me, that would be amazing. And if Chris Hardwick sits in with us, because Chris and Will are best friends, that would be even better. Those would be the three other people I would want most at the table. Because they're the stars in that realm who I am most familiar with and would love to get a chance to just talk to, just hang out with. That would be so much fun. That would really be cool. Good question. 02.
Or two, if you're not in the... double decimals.
02.0. This is from Ronster. Ronster says, what is your absolute favorite die color, size, and number of sides, and your least favorite? Man, I would swear I've answered this exact question. Speaking of repeat questions, maybe I answered this one and I forgot to erase it. But okay, die color, dark color, with white letter or white numbers on it, specifically black with white numbers or black with gold numbers? Yeah, I have answered this question. Size, just your standard size of die. Whatever the standard, what, 30 millimeter? Is that the size of them? I have no idea. 30 millimeter seems too big. 25 millimeter? Anyway.
Can we go measure one?
Just the standard dice sets that you get from Chessex. Those. The ones, when I order a pound of dice from Chessex, when I get a pitcher of dice from Chessex at Gen Con, it's all the dice that are in there, whatever that size is. And obviously the die 12 is my favorite, but a whole set of them would be gorgeous. All right. And then my least favorite is, colors is, anything where the letters or the numbers and the background color are too close together and they're
like
hard to read.
Gold.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything where they're too hard to read. So pale numbers on a pale die, those would be the worst. And the worst size is miniature dice.
Anything. Well, why? They're so much fun.
No, they're useless to me. Useless. They're like candy. I once got my dice confiscated from me in social studies class in 10th grade because she thought they were drugs. Okay? That's what happens when you have miniature dice.
How miniature are we talking?
Well, I had a whole set of little, like the little mini blue ones that we have.
But they were like that big.
Yeah, they were all that big and I had a bag full of them in all sorts of different shapes. And I had a bag full of them, and I was showing them to the guy next to me, and I had them in a baggie. So here I am with a Ziploc baggie full of little tiny dice that apparently look like pills, and I was showing them to the guy next to me, and the teacher snapped and had me bring them to her. And then she kept them in her desk until the end of the class. And then when I came to her after class, and I said, I am so sorry. She's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Just take them back. I thought they were drugs. So
she just blew that over like it was nothing? Like yeah. She didn't just say drugs?
Yeah, well, that's what she thought it was. And my least favorite number of sides is the die 4. No, die 100. Die 100 is horrifying. Now, I can't imagine having a miniature die 100.
Really?
But
the die 30 doesn't deserve any hate?
Well, no. The die 30 is also a terrible, terrible die because it's not very useful. It's hard to roll, but it's not as bad as the die 100 because that sucker just rolls off the table. You're rolling a golf ball. There is no point in a die 100. Just get your percentile set and roll a couple of 10-sideds and you're fine. You don't need 100.
How about the die 7 Andrew has?
I don't mind the die 7. And I just
Have you ever actually heard of a die 7?
Yeah. I've seen them. I haven't seen one in person. I've seen pictures of them. No, they just had an archaeological dig where they found, an ancient, Chinese board game called Bo, and we know about Bo. We've seen it referenced in writings, but we don't know the rules of it. And Bo, because the last person to play Bo played it probably 1,500 years ago. And in the game of Bo, you have a board, and then you have pieces on it and tiles, and then you determine random numbers by throwing you've got a set of six sticks. So when you throw the sticks down, it either lands on the flat side or the convex side, so essentially it's like flipping a bunch of dice, or flipping a bunch of coins all at once. So you throw out your six sticks, which wind up giving you six heads or tails results, and they have a way of reading all that. But it also, they actually found a set, just recently, where they found a complete set with the board, and the stones, and the sticks, the whole set of pieces, and a carved 14-sided die, carved out of bone. And I'm like, and the picture of it was so cool. I'm like, I need a replica of that. I need a 14-sided ancient bow die here in my house.
Carved from bone?
Well, I don't care. I just want a replica of it because obviously I'm not going to get the original unless that museum has really lax security. Oh, all right. And anyway, we're looking at this, this thing online and we're looking at a picture of the board and a picture of these dice and then all the little markers that are there. And Joel came in and he looked at it and he goes, oh, yeah, clearly it was a variation on Clue. And once we looked at it, we realized, oh my God, it is. It's got nine rooms set up with these little lines connecting each of the rooms and then little markers for people to move around. But then, it's the simplest game of Clue ever because with all the pieces on the board, really your only guesses are, well, I think it was the white pawn who did it with a stick in the observatory. That's it. That's all you've got. It's white pawns and sticks.
Sticks were popular weapons back then. Leave them alone.
Clearly. Well, or unless maybe it was, he did it with a bamboo cane. He did it with the bamboo spear. He did it with the, I mean, it, maybe there's, all right, anyway. I'm saying there weren't a lot of variations in the pieces. That's what I'm saying.
His Tekatori sword.
89. And I think this is going to be our last one. So 89 is from, let's go all the way down. Jeez, there we go. 89. Oh. 89 is from Ronster again. Ron says, if the color of everything changed, but was still the same in every other way, how would it affect you? Eventually, I would get used to it. I think anybody would. I mean, you know, give it a couple of weeks and suddenly, you're just going to start perceiving things differently, I think. That, you know, you're going to, I imagine that if I'm, you know, every time I look at apples, apples are now blue. Then I think
apples sound awesome.
And assuming that all the other colors have shifted around the spectrum an equal amount, I think yes, I'm going to be looking at blue apples. And then after 2-3 weeks, it will come to be normal, and I will just start perceiving that as red. That's my guess. That it'd be different, but I think I would you eventually adjust to that.
Calling it a different color, though, I think would be the hardest part.
Yeah, but it also it makes it really tough because they've discovered in experiments that most people have a real problem eating food that's the wrong color. That you give someone
green eggs and ham.
Right, exactly. Green eggs and ham. Give them a steak that is bright purple. All right, and there's nothing wrong with the steak. It otherwise looks exactly the same, except it's bright purple, and it tastes exactly the same. In fact, they can do this with, they give you special glasses that alter the color of things, and they find out that when you're looking at a steak and you're convinced that steak is bright purple, many people can't eat it. And most people have a problem. They feel that the flavor's off, something's wrong with it. That's if they can even bring themselves to eat it at all.
Sort of like Crystal Pepsi.
Right, just like Crystal Pepsi. Crystal Pepsi, which for some reason
is coming back.
Young hipster idiots are really excited about this.
It's coming back.
Case in point.
Thanks to the LEDs.
But Crystal Pepsi, it supposedly, and I don't even remember ever drinking Crystal Pepsi, but supposedly Crystal Pepsi tastes exactly like Pepsi. It just has no coloring in it, so it's clear. It's like drinking 7-Up that tastes like Pepsi. And guess what? That's just wrong.
I can finally, like, have a clear water bottle full of Pepsi in school.
No, it's not. It's still going to be fizzy. They're still going to see the carbonation.
An opaque water bottle.
Yeah, see, it just
translucent.
It's if color, that would be, I think, the biggest thing is that color, if the colors were all changed, until you got used to it, give it 2-3 weeks, if it takes that long even. Until you get used to it, yeah, it would certainly put you off your food for a while. And there may be other similar effects that things that used to be appealing to you are, for whatever reason, disturbing to look at now because, well, it's not supposed to be that color. And I think food would be the biggest issue, but there could be others as well. So anyway, that is the end of the Podomatic, which means, no, god darn it, 45. Yeah, that's right. I'm not happy. 45 is from my wife, Lisa. See what you did?
She had to get one.
You roll again, and you get one from your mom. Oh,
she had to get one in, okay?
Oh, wait, no, this is an easy one. This is an easy one. Good. It says, pull out your phone or iPod. What is the first song that comes up on random on your main playlist? Okay, hold on.
And while we're waiting, I have a question for you.
It is currently Skull Crusher Mountain by Jonathan Colton.
Oh, good song.
But let's fast forward one. Oh, Fraggle Rock by Alistair. Hold on. I love that. Okay. What?
So, the character you play as from the last role-playing game you've played is now hunting you. How screwed are you?
Oh, really screwed, because while she is not the most powerful combatant in the entire game, she could still kick my ass. She also has boots of striding and leaping, so she moves at a natural rate of 40. She casts haste the moment she gets into combat and starts singing that song, and winds up, the song would be the scariest part, because she'd be singing like Taylor Swift songs while hunting me with a bow. It would be horrifying. All right. So once she's got haste cast, she now moves at 70 feet per round. All right. 70. That's huge. And she's not a bad shot with the bow. She's got, she can infuse her bow with arcane power plus the power of the song. So she winds up shooting me at die 6 plus 4 for damage every time. So an average of 7 hit points of damage every time she hits, and she can shoot twice per round. And I only have like 4 hit points because I'm a 0 level commoner. No, I'm probably a first level expert. Would that be about right? Maybe you can call me a second level expert. So maybe I have, but I have a poor constitution. So yeah, maybe I have like 6 or 7 hit points total. I mean, that's really all I'm going to have. Well, no, first level you max out on hit points. So I've got 10. So I could get shot once with an arrow, beg for my life, and then she would kill me. That's assuming she's dead set on killing me, because also, you know, she is chaotic good. So therefore, I might be able to talk her down from this. But, oh man, but she's with that charisma, she's such a good liar and a good diplomacist and a good, I don't think I would stand a chance on any front. No, she would wipe me out in a matter of seconds, and it would be ugly and terrible.
Yeah.
So
the original question for this is the main character of the last video game you played, and I'm playing a lot of Prototype 2 lately.
Yeah, no, you would not last.
Yeah, he runs at a max speed of 55 miles per hour with a giant sword attached to his arm.
Yeah, that's exactly horrifying. All right. Anyway, now
play more Mario.
Now we are all done with the Podomatic, and so therefore, it's time for GLaDOS to give us a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage and Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. The songs I use on my podcast are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own Pocket Mod, go to PocketMod.com. They're free. Well, instructions for printing and folding them yourself are free. It's an awesome deal. You want to do something nice for my podcast? You should subscribe to it in whatever service you're going to use. You should give it a high rating on that service. Maybe even write me a nice review for it. But really, the best thing you can do for me is spread the word. If you really like this podcast, please spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter. Don't forget to check out all the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball, Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. If you want to contact me, my email, mike@nerdprideradio.com. I am at facebook.com/nerdprideradio, on Twitter @nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to get a hold of me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we'll hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for Listener Betrayal. At the end of every podcast, well, at the beginning of every podcast, I go out to my website and Facebook and maybe other places, and I post up that I am recording, and anything people want to put there, I will read it off on the cast, and we will have an awesome time with it. So we're going to start off with my website, nerdprideradio.com/forums, and we'll see what people – oh, my goodness. We've got a – oh, my goodness. All right. First one is from Talvin. That's right. I forgot. I opened up this week. I said, you have to create a new Pathfinder character right now. Name your race and class. Because I figure, you know what? You guys ask me all questions all the time. I'll give you one. And Talvin opens up with Dwarf Cleric Wizard with an eye on the Mystic Theurge Prestige class. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, you know what? My son Noah has figured out what Mystic Theurge is, and he is so excited. He's already a sorcerer. So he's going to start taking levels in Druid now, and he wants to be a Sorcerer, Druid, Mystic Theurge. So he's really, really excited about it. Yes, Aiden?
What's a Mystic Theurge?
A Mystic Theurge. You remember the crazy necromancer girl from Order of the Stick with the mismatched eyes, yes, who was in love with Zykon? She was a mystic theurge. It means you take, you have arcane spell casting, so either wizard, sorcerer, or something like that with arcane power, but then you also do something with divine power, such as an oracle or a cleric or a druid. And you've got levels in both of them, and then when you get high enough, you take the mystic theurge prestige class, and every level of mystic theurge, your spells for both of them advance by one level. So you now have gotten to the point where you can now just keep taking levels, and every level you get new spells on both sides, and it winds up being really, really powerful. So Mystic Theurge is super cool.
But that's twice the levels to get to.
Well, sort of. But, at first. But, the way it adds up, it's by the time you are 16th level total, so you've got, 10 levels of Mystic Theurge, and then you've got 3 of Sorcerer, 3 of Druid, in Noah's case, for example. Instead of being at 16th level, you're instead of being 8th level, 8th level. In spellcasting powers, you are 13th level, 13th level, which is huge. So it makes a big difference. Talvin then posts up again and says, thank you, DM Darks, for DMing for this long. Why? Because he's awesome. All right. He says, I, for one, truly appreciate the opportunity to play with this group of players, and it wouldn't be possible without DM Darks. His hard work is greatly appreciated, and level 7. Those are Talvin's words. Level 7. We are awesome. And then Talvin then adds on PS, DM Darks is awesome. Yeah, we know.
Can we take a moment just to sit here and talk about how awesome DM Darks is?
Yeah, would you like to? Because DM Darks is really awesome. How awesome? So awesome. Talvin then continues, since it's Thanksgiving-ish, and I'm on the theme of thank yous, I want to thank Mike Jones, that's me, for hosting the website and the podcast. Without you hosting the forums, there would be no place to gather with the fine group of people who make up the Nerd Pride Radio user community. Oh, yeah, we are awesome. Thank you so much, Talvin. I appreciate it. You guys are really the best. And I, pardon me, hold on. I'm going to pause while I cough. Give me a second. Yeah, you guys are amazing. And to answer my son's question, yes, I have a little bit of a cough already, but yeah, talking for this long, that's why I keep pausing to cough. You guys didn't know all of the other times I paused to cough, but this time I couldn't get it fast enough. I love my community. I love you guys. Everything you do for me. That's why this podcast is here. It's because you guys keep coming back and I enjoy your company. So you are wonderful. DM Darks posts up and says, Lizard Folk Druid. Oh, heck
that,
yeah.
That was mine when I was 8.
Yeah, that's true. That when he was 8 years old, Lizard Folk Druid is a great character. And then DM Dark says, how awesome is The Shining? that's pretty darn good. I'll give you that. In tradition with the upcoming holiday, what do you think about the hidden subtext of genocide of Native Americans in that movie?
Wait, what?
Well, it was too well hidden, and I read the book when I was 14 or 13, and then saw the movie when I was in high school, and was not smart enough to pick up on that hidden subtext. So, assuming that you're being serious, then it went way over my head.
It's one of those things that's like, no, that's not true.
And then,
is it?
Right. Is it? And if it's not true, then man, that's the best joke ever. You completely got me. So I have absolutely no idea. So I will have to do further research, but not right this moment. Mrs. Darks. Hi, Sarah Beth. Mrs. Darks says, half-elf cleric. Seriously? Half-elf cleric? Oh my God. See, and then she doesn't post anything else because she knows. Mrs. Darks, Sarah Beth, the wife of our brilliant and lovely game master, DM Darks. She has been playing along for a while in the role of Shalelu, who is an elven ranger, and she's there to kind of help guide us, and now we've run across her stepfather, I believe, who she just punched in the face. And she's been a wonderful part of our group for many sessions now. And so someone said something about her sticking on after this segment of the adventure is over, and we said, oh, God, we'd love to have Shalelu stay on with us. And then the game master, Pat, DM Darks, said, yeah, well, I'm not sure if she wants to continue playing Shalelu, but, if you guys want her to stay on, yeah, she'll come up with something. And now Mrs. Darks says, half-elf cleric? Is that a hint? Are you telling us something? Because that would be spectacular. So cool. We love having you as part of the game. Yes, please stay on. If you are interested in playing this game, please be in there because we love having you. Lucy is the next one. Lucy, whose title is Vapid Celebutante. That's awesome.
You made that up.
I know I did, but I don't, I have for every 25 posts, you get a new title, and 25 posts all the way up to the 10,000. So I have 400 different titles in there. I can't remember all of them. Vapid Celebutante. I'm pretty clever. And I didn't write all of them. Some of them I asked for submissions because I was running out of ideas. Lucy says, looks like we're getting a new half-elf cleric with question marks. And then she says, yay, Mrs. Darks. And then she says, gnome witch, baby. Next campaign. Oh, gnome witch sounds awesome.
It's a gnome witch baby.
A gnome witch baby. To answer that question myself, I actually want to play a gunslinger-ish. I don't know if I'm going to go gunslinger or if I'm going to go swashbuckler. Probably swashbuckler, actually. Something that uses panache or grit or something like that in the game. But I want to play a character who is very much Calamity Jane. And I'm really excited about that. Although, that's for our next campaign with you guys. For the campaign I'm playing with my son Jacob, which I'm hoping he's still serious about getting that game together. But for the campaign I'm playing with him, I just came up with a Dampir, so half vampire shaman, who is awesome, and I'm really excited
and
about that.
He can't heal himself.
Right, right. Shaman. Well, a shaman is in. He is in communion with spirits of nature or spirits of different things, and in this particular case, he's actually locked into life spirits. So he is a healer for the most part, which then becomes ironic because as a healer. But a Dampir, the life energy that he channels only hurts himself. He can't heal himself that way. So fascinating character.
Wait, so you like life? Do you eat that life?
No. I would not actually, my vampiric nature does not extend to, draining other people's life essence. Oh yeah. So for those of you who hadn't realized already, Aiden's been here since before the Podomatic started. Eli just showed up. Say hi, Eli.
And yeah. I showed up a bit earlier. And
way over there in the background, that's Noah. But anyway, done. So we're finished with that one. Let's go on over to the Facebook page. And on the Facebook page, I have people that like my stuff. That's fine. But do I have people who responded to my stuff? Let's find out.
It's funny because you have no friends.
Six people reached. Oh, there it is. Aha. Uh-oh. Damn. Okay.
Aren't you supposed to be working?
Hold on. Done. The first comment is from my wife. And Lisa says, why does my iTunes and my iPod continue to lock up after a few minutes? All right, your iPod, I don't know.
Is she asking you for tech support over the podcast?
No, this is something we've been going over recently.
Okay.
iTunes is because iTunes pisses me off. I don't know what's wrong with it. It was locking up under iTunes 11, and now I've upgraded to iTunes 12, and it's still locking up. I'm using Windows 8 on my machine. And, I mean, literally, everything was fine. It was fine until a week ago. All right, a week ago I used iTunes, and it was fine. Now I use iTunes yesterday, and all of a sudden I turn it on, and every time I put on iTunes, my entire computer locks up, freezes. I have to do a hard reboot to get it restarted. And it happens after about 15 seconds of iTunes being on, and it's horrible. And so I upgraded to iTunes 12, didn't make any difference. The notes I'm seeing online are telling me I probably have to completely uninstall all Apple products and then reinstall iTunes from scratch, which means I'm probably going to lose all of my playlists, which means I'm pissed and it sucks. Because the last time I had to reinstall iTunes, I was forced to re-add all of my songs, which, by the way, is hours. Hours upon hours of time as it goes through and discovers all of my songs and puts them in the library. Oh, I hate that. And then I had to reconstruct all of my playlists. So not a pleasant thing. But also at the same time, I need to upgrade the computer to Windows 10. So I think tomorrow, which is Monday, I'm going to start. I'll get to work early. And so before work starts, I will just start a backup running on this computer to make sure I have everything on backup, and that will run for about 10 hours just to get a full backup of everything. And then later in the week, I can then upgrade the computer to Windows 10, which hopefully people are telling me it's not that dangerous and it's not that painful. So I'll get that done.
Could you upgrade mine to 10 while you're at it?
Yeah, we can probably do both of them to 10. We'll do one first, give it a week to make sure it works. And then after upgrading to 10, then I will reinstall all of iTunes. Well, maybe we'll see if iTunes works after we upgrade to 10. And if it doesn't, then we'll reinstall iTunes from there. But the whole thing, we're talking about potentially processes that are going to take, 30 hours before it's all done. Not 30 hours that I have to sit there and baby it the whole time, but it's a lot of, okay, set this to go. All right, good. It's going to back up. Good. We'll come back in 12 hours. It'll be done. Oh, it's discovering songs. Okay, let's walk away for 17 hours last time while it finds all of our songs. It's just tedious. That's all it is. So why your iPod doesn't work, I don't know. Why your iTunes doesn't work, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure I can fix it. It's just going to take some time. And again, then the computer will be upgraded and that'll be awesome. So
that's what I love about IT is that I don't know what's wrong with it, but I can fix it.
Look, I don't know what was wrong with your computer before, but it's working now, and I call that a win. That's all that matters.
I did that.
So, yes, yes.
Are you sure running both Windows 10, uploading it both on both of your computers won't crash our whole system?
No, of course not. No, we'll do them one at a time. I'll run one here, and then if this one works and everything pans out, then we'll upgrade the other machine a week later. And everything will be fine.
Okay.
So, Dad, do you know that the updates for Windows 10 have been getting really more invasive lately?
I've heard.
Yes, so someone got an ad that just says, Windows 10 is already coming. You can't hide it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to happen. Yeah, Windows 10, the ads keep popping up every time I turn the machine on. It happens to me all the time.
Like, so they keep getting more sarcastic and invasive?
Well, because it's free now, and it is better than Windows 8, so why wouldn't you do it?
Right.
Okay, Sarah Beth then says, have you seen Room 237? No, I haven't. We're watching it right now. It's a documentary about the Shining, sort of. More like people's theories on it. It's really cool. Okay, so that answers the question that Pat had. I need to go watch Room 237 to see what the theory is about Native American genocide in the subtext of The Shining. So that actually sounds really awesome. Is it on Netflix? Is that where I'm going to find it?
For sure.
All right, anyway.
Did you guys start watching this because you mentioned it?
No. I'm mentioning it because they mentioned it. Her husband is the one that brought it up
first. Earlier on this podcast.
So, all right, anyway. Okay. That's it from Facebook. Now I have one more place out on the Fantasy Movie League forums. This is the second week. Last week I tried it and I asked them if they wanted to post anything to the podcast. Nobody responded at all. I think they're intimidated. But I tried again this time and we'll see if anyone has responded. If not this week, then I won't do it again. Nope. Nobody responded. So you know what that means? We are all done. So, say goodnight, Aiden.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Eli.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Noah.
Good night,
Noah. I don't know if you guys heard that. Say goodnight, R2.